ain't the kind to wear a tie. Button up from 9 to 5. I tried that life but said goodbye. I'm not always polite, but I get the job done. Who says that work can never be fun? I'm simply unprofessional.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Simply Unprofessional. I'm your host Webby, and joining me tonight we got Devin.
Hey everybody, how's it going?
And that's it. It is a nice quiet night here in Distractions Media compound. Devin, I know we were just talking about this. Tonight's topic, a little place in Japan. Now this was brought to my attention by a coworker of mine. It was recommended as a topic. We're going to touch on this. We're going to see how this goes. A little place in Japan. I'm going to butcher all the names in this, just so you know. But it's called Aokigahara, also known as the Suicide Forest or the Sea of Trees in Japan. Now, you know a little bit more about this than I do. I'm going to be reading mainly off of Wikipedia, and then we're going to discuss a few other things. It's a forest in the northwestern flank of Japan's Mount Fuji, right? You said it was about 30 square kilometers or 12 square miles of hardened lava.
Yep, that's pretty much the floor. It's hardened. Most of the floor, if not, you know, roots are growing out of it, but the basis of it is hardened lava.
Now, Mount Fuji. Here's my first question. I don't know much about lava, at least not hardened lava or cooled lava. Mm-hmm. How the hell can forests, how the hell can, you know, grass and shrubs and stuff grow on that? Is that possible? I mean, obviously it is.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think about it. You know, you have to imagine hardened lava is kind of very similar to, you know, like, rock. So, I mean, you know, you get forests that grow between the cracks of rocks and things like that. So, I'd imagine this is fairly old. You know, I'm talking possibly thousands of years old, if not older, that all started growing. And eventually over time, you know, the forest kind of just overtook what was there. I mean, okay. All it really takes is like one root, you know, get like one root in the road, and then eventually, you know, concrete starts breaking up and everything. I mean, I'll imagine it would take one root, one good root, to just upheave everything.
True. Now, in lieu of me butchering this name repeatedly, because I don't speak Japanese, I will just continually be referring to this area as either Suicide Forest or the Sea of Trees. So for the listeners out there, if you hear me say either one of those, obviously I'm talking about this particular area. Now, one thing I see popular, like one thing that strikes me as odd and unique, it really kind of stands out, is on the western edge of the Sea of Trees, there are several different caves that are filled with ice. And apparently that's a big tourist destination for school trips. I didn't realize Japan had that type of climate to sustain ice, at least not caves of ice.
That ties into a good fact that I just figured out. So apparently the trees are so tall, and they naturally grow really crooked and kind of not straight up and down. Sun's blocked out after about 10 feet. So while you can see, you can't see past the trees really to the direct skyline after about 10 to 15 feet in the air.
All right.
Yep. And towards the center of the forest, it's in fact so dense, wind can't even really get past the trees. So it's dead silent.
I was actually just reading that too, as far as also the lava being very porous apparently absorbs sound. I'm guessing kind of like egg cartons might do the same thing. And that's a, it says that it helps to provide visitors with a sense of solitude, which let's be realistic here, folks. You're gonna walk your sorry ass out into a forest, kill yourself. Solitude's what you want, right? You don't want a bunch of people knowing that you're there. Now, how many people, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, like I said, you know a little bit more about this place than me. First off, how long has this place been around?
Ooh.
Is that even a fact that is known by people?
I'm not sure. Let's look it up and see.
And then the other thing is, do they have any idea or any type of rough estimation as to how many victims this forest has taken, and or how many people have gone off on that long walk into the forest and never came back out?
Well, it's kind of fucked up, in the sense that in modern days they estimate it's about 100 a year. However, there are stories going back to, you know, way before then, you know, Edo period and before that, that in times of famine, people would go and abandon their elderly there to essentially starve to death when they could no longer afford to feed them. And that also kind of plays into the haunted aspect of the forest too. They say a lot of those spirits are angry and haunt the forest.
Definitely not somewhere I'd want to be at night.
No.
I'm a real big pussy when it comes to, like, haunted areas. I remember when I was a kid, my mom took me to a haunted house. And when I say kid, I was maybe 6, 7-ish. And I went into the haunted house, and I thought I was going to be a big tough guy. I knew, you know, going in that all these people were not real, and they were just real, like, regular people with masks and all this other stuff. I had that mentality even as a 6-year-old. But, dude, the first motherfucker jumped out at me. He was dressed up like Freddy Krueger. I fucking socked him one in the snot box. And then we were politely asked to leave the haunted house. It was fucked up. I was like, really? Looking back on it now, it's like, why'd they kick us out? Because a fucking 6-year-old beat a 30-year-old grown-ass man? You know, that dude couldn't take a single punch from a kid, so then he just kicked the fucking kid out. He's a troublemaker. No, you fucking scared the shit out of him. You deserve to be punched.
You were a pretty tough kid, Webby.
And then I worked at a haunted hayride for a few years. My sister and my mom, they worked a lot with 4-H, and they did a lot with horses and whatnot, and so we were helping out at a farm that's right down the road from me. And I remember my role one year was I was supposed to run away from my mom. She was a witch. She was supposed to chase me for a little ways. And I was supposed to run up to the back of this wagon, the horse-drawn wagon, and kind of jump up onto the back step. And then a couple other people were supposed to come out of the woods and grab me and pull me off. That was the whole spiel. That was our part. Leave it to the drunkards who go through at the midnight fucking ride. And I ran up, jumped on top of the back. Two fucked up things happened. First, they all started wanting to help me. Like, I don't understand, like, if they knew that this was like, hey, you're not supposed to help me. Also, you're not supposed to fucking touch me. Just let this shit happen. No, they were grabbing my arms. They were trying to pull me into the wagon. They were all cheering and yelling for me to come on and everything. And then the two people who were supposed to pull me off started to drag me off the wagon. So then it became a tug of war with me being the rope, which was really uncomfortable. And then finally, they started to lose the tug of war. And so I was just kind of holding on to the edge of the wagon, kind of doing the whole show of like, oh my God, no, save me, save me. Motherfucking drunk ass bastard threw a beer bottle, hit me square in the forehead. I fell off into a pile of horseshit. God, I hate Halloween.
Halloween is ironically one of my favorite holidays.
I used to like it, and then I've gotten old and angry.
But see, yeah.
For various reasons.
You know, no, I get that. See, my history with horror movies, it's horror in general, I hated it for a long time. And then somewhere down the line, I fell in love with it, and I have no idea why. I genuinely like the feeling of being scared.
I don't know.
I genuinely do. You know, it's one of those things I genuinely can say I like feeling scared. I like being terrified. Yeah, so I mean, like, I will seek that stuff out, and it for me it's fun. So my Halloween's usually, you know, maybe a haunted house or two, and then I'm usually at home binge watching horror movies. That's how Halloween usually goes. Usually binge watching horror movies like alone with the lights out, and hoping for the best.
Yep.
That's
so okay. Getting back on track. Sorry to all you listeners for that little tangent about horror stuff.
It was very important, though.
Let's talk more about Suicide Forest. Hey, reading this on Wiki, for those of okay, first off, suicide's illegal, right? Is it illegal in Japan?
I actually don't think it is, but I'll tell you in a second.
Because I do listen to a few different podcasts where they talk about serial killers and certain areas that have a lot of urban legend and urban lore and stuff. And one of them did mention in a news story somewhere in Japan that there's a place called like a suicide bridge. There's this, it's akin to like our Golden Gate Bridge.
Actually, our Golden Gate Bridge is a hot spot for suicide.
Right. So this bridge over in Japan, everybody goes there to jump off and die. They tried to stop this from happening by covering the bridge in butter. Not shitting you. They covered this shit in butter so that way people couldn't climb it. Yeah, people couldn't climb it.
I love that. I love that backwards ass solution. I love it.
Right?
That's great. That is, okay. Okay.
Now you're just going to get a bunch of fucking morons coming out of the woodwork wanting to lick the bridge.
You're just going
to
have people like, fuck it. I, you know, drive it home. Wife calls you. Hey, can you pick up some butter? Fuck, I forgot. Just pull over to the side of the road, scrape some off the bridge.
So, I mean, thinking about it, like, I think in Japan, it's frowned upon. It might be illegal, but in all honesty, just like in the States, unless you're there catching somebody in the process of doing this, how the hell are you going to really stop somebody from committing suicide?
I would love this. I would. Well, I mean, I don't want to say I would love to see it, because it's kind of, we're talking about suicide, and that's, I never want to see anybody actually do that. But I would love to see somebody try a suicide, like a person who committed suicide, to like they fucking like weekend at Bernie's, I'm sitting there, and he's right. Like, you know, you're guilty for this. It's like, what do you mean suicide's illegal? Like, I don't even understand why a law needs to exist and have for suicide to be illegal.
Right.
Given the fact that it's, you know, it's not triable.
In all honesty, you know how they could do it if they really wanted to. I mean, this wouldn't stop it. I think it would potentially reduce the amount of suicides that countries have. If you're going to make it illegal, don't threaten the person who wants to commit suicide with potential jail time if you thwart them.
Just fine the family or something?
Yeah, tell them that it's going to be a hefty fine and or repercussions for their family, their loved ones.
Yeah. I mean, well,
and then it's like, okay, yeah. Fuck, you know, and then they do have to think of
that. Well, I guess that is part of the thing. That's kind of part, it plays part of it, because they say, you know, because you don't get insurance benefits at all if you commit, if they, you know, if somebody commits suicide, there's no insurance benefits when it won't pay for it.
Oh wow.
So in a way it is. So you know, if you're particularly not well off and family wise and you kill yourself, you're denied your life insurance in most situations. I think there's been exceptions to that rule, but in most situations you're denied your life insurance across the board. Oh. So then they have to come out of pocket for your funeral and everything like that. And yes, in it is legal in Japan to commit suicide. However, assisted suicide is illegal, as well as euthanasia, also illegal.
Huh. Well, talking about that, the one reason I spread it off onto that little tangent as well is in recent years, in the Sea of Trees, since it is internationally known as one of Japan's most popular destinations for suicide, they've apparently started putting signs up at the head of some of the trails throughout the forest that urge suicidal visitors to think of their families in the Contact Suicide Prevention Association, which I'm not opposed to those signs. In fact, I'd be grateful to see those signs. It does show that people do care. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you're walking into a place called Suicide Forest with the intent on killing yourself, I don't think a sign's really going
to
help.
Well, I mean, first off, you have to take a trip. It's not like there's a town that just like right there. Like you have to get on a train. You have to take a trip. You have to kind of commit for that.
So talking about a little bit of the geography of this place, I'm going to read you this little thing. The forest floor mostly consists of volcanic rock, which can be difficult to penetrate with the hand tools such as picks or shovels. Since the forest is very dense, hikers and tourists trekking through the suicide forest have begun to use plastic tape to mark their paths so as to avoid getting lost in recent years. Beyond the designated trails lead to several tourist attractions such as the Ice Cave and Wind Cave. What the fuck is the Wind Cave? I obviously can take a guess, but they got just random ass caves with different fucking
elements,
elemental fucking powers out here.
Yep.
Damn, this shit's straight out of anime.
It is.
The first kilometer of the forest is littered with tape and other rubbish left by tourists, despite officials' attempts to remove it. After the first kilometer into the suicide forest towards Mount Fuji, within the Fuji Hakone Izu National Park, I told you I'm butchering these names, people. The forest is in better condition. That's probably because most people don't make it that far while still holding their trash. They throw it out in the first kilometer, with little to no litter and few obvious signs of human presence. However, portrayals of the Sea of Trees where navigational compasses go haywire are false. The needle of magnetic compasses will move if placed directly on the lava, but are otherwise stationary if held at a normal height. So wait, lava has a magnetic thing?
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yep, lava does make sense. Lava is magnetic. To add on to that,
wait, hold on. Is lava magnetic like to the point where like if you hold a magnet up to it, like it'll attract it and or push it away? Like, is it that type of magnetic, or is it so little that an actual magnet won't have any effect on it? Because that'd be fucking sweet.
Well, you have to imagine, like Hawaii. I think it definitely is magnet. Like, it loses magnetism over time, but you have to imagine how much iron deposits are in molten rock. So I would imagine lava would be significantly magnetic. But the problem is, how close can you get to molten rock and
test this theory?
Yeah,
but no, like I'm thinking like this would be sweet if they could somehow impose this idea on places like Hawaii, you know, islands, places, and like set up these big ass guardrails of just like super magnets, so if lava starts rolling an ass down this hill, it'll come near
it has a track it just has a track that it follows.
Yeah, it'll just be pushed away from those magnets and then just dump into the ocean. Come on, that'd be sweet.
That would be sweet. That would be very, very sweet. Or theoretically, I mean, you could make a rail gun like that. You could, have it just like and just shoot it straight out into the ocean. You know, just line it up, use electricity, just, like supercharge the magnet and just shoot it straight out all the molten rock. That'd be dope. I like this, Webby. Webby the scientist, people.
That's right. I'm Dr. Webby and I'm a goddamn non-professional.
And you know what? I've seen people get millions of dollars in research money for dumber shit. So we're going to submit this in for research, people.
Bam.
I can't tell you how many studies I've seen. Like, I was like, oh yeah, we were given $500,000 for research. These 14 test subjects. So what the fuck would you spend 500 grand on?
So you mentioned something about finding bodies in the forest here.
Yes.
In 2003, 105 bodies were found in the forest, exceeding the previous record of 78 in 2002. In 2010, the police recorded more than 200 people having attempted suicide in this particular forest, of whom 54 completed that act. Suicides are said to increase during March, the end of the fiscal year in Japan. So that's all those people saying, oh, I lost my job, I can't provide for my family, I'm going to go off myself, because obviously that's the right choice. Work at a fucking McDonald's, people.
Okay. Right? Damn. This is fucked up. So.
Hold on one second. As of 2011, the most common means of suicide in the forest were hanging or drug overdose. In recent years, local officials have stopped publicizing the numbers in attempts to decrease Suicide Forest's association with suicide. Although, with that amount of people, now they did say that the most common means is hanging and or drug overdose. Although this particular forest is a single popular spot for suicides, statistics show that in general, more Japanese choose to end their lives by jumping in front of trains in Tokyo than by venturing to the slopes of Mount Fuji. Probably because it's easier to do.
Yeah. Like I said, to get there, it's a commitment, you know? It's a commitment. Yep. But to add on to your bodies being found, one fact I found out is apparently the forest workers there have to carry the bodies out. And there's a series of rituals that take place. And it's going to sound like I'm joking, but I'm not. Let me explain. So apparently when a body is found, the workers have the solemn and complicated task to carry the bodies out of the forest down to the police station, where the bodies are put in a special room used specifically to house bodies for suicide. This is where things get crazy. The forest workers that found the body then have to play a game of Jenkinpon, which is what we call rock, paper, scissor, to see who has to sleep in the room with the corpse overnight until it's picked up the next day. This is all part of the ritual, so the spirit of deceased is not left alone.
What?
Yes.
Dude, I wouldn't want to be sleeping in no room with a dead body.
You better get really good at rock, paper, scissors.
No way. You know what I'd do? I'd cheat. Depending on who I was playing against, I'd cheat and say I threw rock and they threw paper. I would snap their neck and say that they committed suicide.
In the police station.
Yeah. Well, okay. Hey, it's ballsy, but it might work.
It's so ballsy that it might work.
That's right.
He would never murder a guy in a police station. Come on now.
Hey, you never know. That oddly enough, people, that's really all the information there is on the Wikipedia for Aokigahara, the Suicide Forest. It has been referred to in several media, including anime, manga, films, video games, literature, and music. I'm curious as to what video games and what films they're referred to.
Movie starring Natalie Dormer, The Forest, recently came out. Wasn't that great? Let me see what else we got. Gus Van Sant's 2015 film called Sea of Trees with Matthew McConaughey and Ken Watanabe.
Oh shit, Matt McConaughey?
Yep. And Ken Watanabe.
I don't know who that is, but I know good old Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, you'll know Ken Watanabe when you see him, trust me.
He's no Donnie Yen.
He's not Donnie Yen, but you'll definitely know him when you see him.
You gonna post me a picture so I can see this?
I can post you a picture of the Ken Watanabe.
Okay. We do have another website we're going to be pulling some questions or odd facts from.
He played the King and the King and I. He played the bald dude in Last Samurai.
Oh, yeah, I know this guy.
Yeah, you know the guy for sure when you see him. What else we got here? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's all the movies I have available. There was a novel, a 1960s novel called Black Sea of Trees by Seicho Matsumoto. That's all I've got for those wonderful, wonderful things.
So, you sent me a list or a link rather to a website. 15 eerie things about Japan's suicide forest. You can see how eerie these things are.
I mean, I think we actually covered a lot of them.
Oh, okay then. No, that's true.
Actually. Okay, well, you may not be able to call for help. Rich with the magnetic iron, the soil of the suicide forest, plays serious havoc on cell phones, GPS systems. We prove that compasses is not necessarily true, but I can definitely see with the tall trees and with that slight magnetic interference, I could definitely see cell phones getting fucked up. So we kind of debunk the number 13, the fact that compasses get screwed up.
Hmm. You know, this being, we have talked quite a bit about suicide this episode. I do want to preface this, also, like you stated, suicide itself, the act, is not illegal in Japan, but assisted suicide is. Now, that caught me as odd. Although, I'm not super up to date with other people's cultures.
To give you an idea,
but I was
that
aware
is, that is across the board, that's pretty true for most places. Surprisingly enough, Canada, all three are legal. Euthanasia is illegal. Suicide's legal, and assisted suicide is legal, but it has to be done through medical assisted suicide.
Okay, so you'd go to a doctor that is willing to assist you with
yes.
that. Now I'm reading here. Now Japan has a long tradition of suicide. This shouldn't come as news to people, at least not to anybody who possibly listens to this podcast, because we're all about nerdy stuff, and one of the nerdy things involving samurais.
Mm-hmm.
That was huge into like a samurai's ritual suicide was something that was thought as honorable.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name. Seppuku.
Seppuku is exactly right.
Seppuku. It dates back to Japan's feudal era. While the practice is no longer the norm, it has left mark in Japan. Apparently, vestiges of the seppuku culture can be seen today in the way suicide is viewed as a way of taking responsibility. Now, I've been down, more so mentally, down those paths. I've had really, really bad days where this has been on my mind quite a bit. I can honestly say I've never thought of it as taking responsibility. I don't necessarily agree with everyone's instantaneous jump to, oh, that's the coward's way out, or that's the easy way out. I will say one suicide that really got me. I mean, you hear about these famous people, you know, wrestlers who OD on drugs, or you know, whether that's accidental or on purpose or whatever. Suicide happens every day. Okay. You don't necessarily always hear about it. But one that really affected me was Robin Williams. Now, I don't look at Robin Williams with any type of disdain. I don't think he's a coward. I don't think he took the easy way out. After reading a lot of different articles about him, about his family, I think he was backed into a corner and felt there really was no other choice in this matter, and that he was doing what was best. I can relate to that. Like, some people I know, they automatically do jump straight on that. You're a coward if you choose. To me, in my opinion, the people who say that have never had to look those types of thoughts in the eye. or else they wouldn't think that. It's unimaginably difficult to weigh that option of what can I do to improve over taking my life. I apologize for that little tangent. The moral of that little story there is reading this for the first time. I've always known that seppuku was a samurai tradition. It was a ritualistic type of suicide, and it was a very honorable thing to do. I never thought of it or viewed it as a way of taking responsibility. I guess it just opens another window for what this word, what this action really truly means to various people. And everyone's different. Anyway, yeah. Devin, do you have anything that you'd like to toss in now to brighten this up? Because I think I've dragged down the entire podcast so far.
No, you haven't dragged it down. You made it real. I mean, and that's really what we did. I mean, and it's fine. Because I think it's something that needs to get talked about. You know, we don't, you know, us here, we don't necessarily have the loudest voice, but I think we definitely, one point or another, and especially given the fact in the culture we're in, yeah, I mean, with, you know, with the whole geek culture, it's a pretty popular thing that happens sometimes, you know? So I think you definitely mentioning it and you talking about it from your own personal experiences is, how do I put it? It means more than, you know, I can come in and say say things and whatever. But I mean, reality is, you know, have I had those thoughts in the past? Sure, I have. That was many, many years ago. It's been a long time since, you know, you are more qualified to speak about that than me. But I will say this, because you kept saying things, you know, you kept saying that, oh, people instantly jump in that bandwagon of, oh, you're taking the coward's way out. I will say this. You don't know how someone feels. And if you know, so just saying that is not necessarily true, because that's not going to necessarily solve that what that person perceives to be their problem. It's not going to solve their problem. They're obviously doing this because they are having a problem, whether it's an issue in their, you know, in their life, multiple issues in their life. You know, but they, you know, when you reach that point, I think you kind of hit that point and you kind of reach and you can, you know, you can speak to this Webby. That we reach that point where that becomes a viable option, that's rarely the first thought. That's rarely the first solution in that, you know, in your equation. You know what I mean? You don't work the equation of your problems, and that's not the first answer that chugs out. It's usually, it's a buildup. It's a slow grind. It's not, you know, you're not going to sit there and say, well, I can't afford milk this month. I'm going to go kill myself. Like, that's not something that happens. In most cases, I will say that. I'm not saying, you know, that doesn't happen, but I'm not going to say that's something that happens in most cases. It's a progressive buildup. Now, that milk, not having to afford milk for the month, that might be the trigger, but there's more going on there. So everybody that says, you know, that's the coward's way out or that's the weak way out, I just encourage you to, if you are saying that, if somebody comes to you and says, you know what, I'm thinking of killing myself, and you say, oh, don't do that, man, that's a coward's way out, maybe you should just talk to that person and see what they're feeling. Just having that one conversation with them could easily persuade them, but don't instantly jump down their throats. Because you come off almost attacking in that sense when you don't mean it.
Right.
And, you know, one thing to say here, this is just a little side fact. One successful suicide victim committed suicide by jumping from the Golden Gate Bridge, left behind a note saying this: I'm going to walk to the bridge. If one person smiles at me in the way, I won't jump. He lived 2 miles from the bridge. So he walked 2 miles, and not a single person smiled at him, made conversation with him.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's really it. You just need to, I say, you know, if somebody's coming to you and they, you know, and they're bringing this up around you, it's a clear indication maybe they don't really want to do it, and they're looking for an excuse. They're looking for an excuse.
I will tell you firsthand. If somebody approaches you saying that they have these thoughts, they want help. This is their way of asking for help. And if they came to you, don't automatically think that they're a coward. Don't put them down or belittle them in hopes of, you know, shaming them out of these thoughts. They came to you with something this big. Just take the time out of your day to talk to them. I'm not saying that all suicides are society's fault by any means. I will say that, in my opinion, this day and age, society as a whole sucks. It does. I'm sorry to say that. I'm sorry if people don't agree with me. Devin, that story, that little thing you just read about the one person who successfully jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and left behind the note of, if one person smiles to me, I won't do. That rung a bell with me. I live in a pretty small town. Okay. And I live on a side road, not even on a main road. I live on a side road that has technically a dead end. All right. When I drive home on this road and I pass another car, or I pass somebody out walking their car or walking their dog, not walking their car, that's fucked up. I remember when I was a kid, my neighbors would wave. I'd wave to them. You know, everybody knew each other on the street. It's to the point now where you drive by somebody and you wave and they act like they don't even fucking see. And it's like, wow, my instant thought when I see that, or when that happens, is, wow, that guy's a douchebag. Like, I took the 2 seconds out of my day and the 2 seconds out of my mental train of thought of whatever it is that I was thinking about at the time to acknowledge your existence, and you can't even wave back. You can't just give a little head nod and a smile. You know, and then the lady at the very end of the road from me, any day that I see her, this little old lady, she's usually outside gardening. She's been there forever. And I'll drive by and I'll wave. She always waves back. And she always has this big smile on her face when she does. And no matter how shitty of a day I'm having, that little thing that just gets me to smile, you know? And I will say, getting choked up here, Devin. Damn. She just got real, son. I will say, I do agree with your point, Devin, about when people do have those thoughts, and I mean, more people have thoughts of killing themselves than any of you listening would like to believe. It's a very common thing. Just, oh, what would happen if I did this? What would happen? Who would miss me? Blah, blah, blah. Having thoughts about it is one thing. It's generally not for those of the people who really are intently having those thoughts, it's generally not your first go-to thought. Sometimes it's a matter of you dwelling on everything that's fucking up in your life. You dwelling on the serious lack of positive things in your life. For some people, I know myself included in this batch, I suffer from depression and anxiety and a slew of other things. And one of the hardest things for me to gain, for me to factor in, is some days I get angry. I just, I, I, I'm pissed off right from waking up, right off the get-go. And then I think about it in my head while I'm walking around. My muscles are fucking clenched. My fists are balled up tight. And my heart's racing. Like I'm ready to get into a fucking UFC ring and just fight somebody. And I start thinking, I have no reason to be angry. Why am I this angry? If I had a reason, fine. I can deal with that. I can move past that. Then I have something to work off. I can reverse engineer and hopefully calm myself down. That's how I always do it. But the worst part is I wake up so angry that I only get more angry and more frustrated at the fact that I have no reason to be the thing. And it's just a feeling that I feel. And I can't just turn it off. And there is no cause to it. So I can't, you know, reverse engineer that back down to calm myself down. But then there's other days where it's, I go through the motions of my day. And it's like I'm sitting in the back seat of a car watching somebody else drive me. It's infuriating not having a sense of control. And it's downright scary. It's horrific. That, I will say, was the mindset that I was in when I attempted it. It was probably hands down the scariest day of my life. I've done a lot of emotional and mental work since then. And I constantly try to show my appreciation and the love that I have for my friends who have helped me through this. And I know I constantly tell everybody who work on the podcast here, Distractions Media, how much they, each one of them mean to me, because each one of you guys helped me get through that time in your own way. Whether or not it was readily known that I went that far, it is now, apparently, because I just said it out loud on a podcast. But that was one of those situations where it wasn't a matter of me making a choice. It wasn't a matter of me saying, oh, A or B, I guess I'll go with B. It was, I didn't feel like I was in control. I was in the passenger seat, watching something else drive the car that is my life. I had no control, and scary. Do you think that one of the more frustrating things, and one of my coworkers, Mike, he does it more so in a joking manner now, because he knows that it bothers me so much, but it's when people look at you and they think that depression just means that you're sad about something. And I mean, that might be part of it. Maybe you are sad about something. But when they think that it's just simply that you're down in the dumps or feeling blue, and they get you to chuckle at a joke, and they either A, don't think that you're depressed anymore because you let out a small little laugh at something that you thought was funny, or they just tell you, hey man, just don't be depressed anymore. It's not a fucking light switch, people. I spent the better part of 28 years doing the stereotypical Irish thing of just bottling up all my emotions. Good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter. All that shit up inside. Let out very little of it. And then once you have it all pent up inside and you're getting ready to overflow and you're about to burst, find some constructive way to let out all of that fucking anger, all of that confusion and anxiety. Usually I would go and I'd hit stuff. I do have anger issues. I'd never hit a person unless they deserved it and unless they were the reason I was pissed off. I was always that fucking asshole who punch a hole through a wall, then the next day I'd be fixing the fucking drywall. And then I got a punching bag, so then I'd start punching that. That's what I did for so long. And then I realized that I needed help. My buddy Ross suffers from this. He's been suffering from this since high school. And I always, for the longest time, I was one of those ignorant people. I admit it. I thought it was all just purely mental. Like, hey, if you have a strong enough willpower, you can beat this. Depression won't mean nothing. You know, you'll be able to just crush it, you know? Not the case, people. And asking for help, looking to others for help, it's not a sign of weakness. That's for damn sure. I found that out. It's coming out and telling people what you suffer from is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. It was so much easier just to bottle shit up and deal with things that way. But it doesn't get you anywhere. It only adds to everything. All in all, I'd never walk my sorry ass out to Mount Fuji to do anything like this, though. Getting back on topic.
I mean, yeah, it's a pretty steep. Well, first, it's a really expensive trip. I've seen tickets out there. it's a pretty expensive trip, first off. I mean, if I had that kind of money, I don't know, man. I would take a lot of trips. I don't know if I would take a trip to Japan to kill myself if I had that kind of money.
No, not me.
And I think there's more effective ways.
Yeah. You know, don't go to Japan. You want to take a trip and have an increased risk of not coming back alive? Go to fucking Australia. Go to Africa. Get eaten by a lion. You'll make the news. Almost guaranteed.
Just go fight a bear. Fucking wrestle a bear.
That's how I want to go out. That's how I want to go out. And that's probably the way I will end up going out. It's on my bucket list. I want to wrestle a bear.
I already know how I'm going out. I'm going out. I want to be like 80. My kids are going to put me in a home, and me and this old guy, we're going to kill each other, having a fight over false teeth. We're going to be wrestling for false teeth, and we're both just going to have a heart attack and die right there. It's going to be fucked up. But I've come to terms with it. Oh, hey, you know, not to bring everybody down, but I was working at a school today.
I think I've already done that.
I was working at a school today. I'm going to bring you guys down, but like make you just feel really old, that kind of way. I was working at a school today. Specifically, I was working at a school that had a kindergarten class, and outside the door, I saw something that genuinely made me sad for the day. Above their door said, Class of 2030.
What grade school is this?
This is like they were kindergarten, first grade. It's like class of 2030. I literally walked and I looked at that and I stared at it.
So that means they'll graduate high school in 2030?
Yep. I literally saw that and I just stopped in the hallway and just stared at it for a minute and I was like, I'm sad now. My soul is weeping.
Yeah, I graduated in 2002.
See, I graduated 2010. I mean,
fucking old,
dude.
Although I did do something really cool a few years back when I got home from Texas. I lived in Texas for a bit, and then I came back home. I found out that my kindergarten teacher still taught kindergarten at the same school in my hometown. I figured, okay, I want to go surprise her and I want to go visit her. A, because I think it'd be cool. And B, I want to know if she remembers me at all. I don't know how fucking teachers do it, because they have so many kids every year. Not only did she remember who I was by name. Honestly, you know what the coolest part about that trip was?
What?
She had a kindergarten class going. Those kids came up to my fucking, like, knees. I felt like a giant. I was just like, you know, if I step the wrong way, I'm ending a child's life on accident. This is horrific.
It gets so satisfying.
It was. I was just like, oh, I feel so much like Godzilla right now.
And that's when Webby looked down and realized he was in an entire room of Asian kids and felt really racist for a minute.
You know, I say a lot of racist shit sometimes in jest. I never really am sorry for any of it.
I mean, racism. Okay, look, I have a theory about racism. Racism is hilarious until it's not.
I'm going to fight racism with racism.
Racism is hilarious until it's not. And that's kind of a weird thing to say, but when you think about it, it makes sense. Racism is hilarious until somebody gets offended. You know, that's the thing. Like, don't get offended by it. I'm not, if I'm being racist in jest, I'm not, you know, picking on you. I'm not whatever. Like, you know, hit me back with something racist. It's fine. Like, I'm not upset about it. You know, I go out sometimes and, you know, people say things racist or a little off color. I don't get upset. I just go, whatever. It's your lifestyle. And you want to throw somebody off? Like, I remember sitting at a bar one time. And these guys walked up, me and my friends were in it, these guys walked up and said, you know, these guys said something clearly very racist and off color. And they were looking for a fight, you could tell. They were looking, or some kind of confrontation. And I literally looked this guy clean in the eye and just shook his hand. And I was like, it's pretty funny. Caught him off guard completely. Did not know what to do. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's kind of how I tell people something all the time. Like, don't let people get you, you know, upset. Don't. The best weapon against, you know, violence and the best weapon against, you know, excuse me for sounding like Gandhi for a second. The best weapon against violence and the best weapon against insult is literally just to be like, hey, laugh about it, let it roll off your shoulder and keep it moving. Because you win. You instantly win. And I like to win. So.
Me too.
That's that.
Me too.
I like to win. I don't. I will go to stupid lengths to win at something. Like, for instance, if I was in Saw, I'd fucking do it. Whatever I had to do, I don't give a fuck. I'd do it. And I'd be like, I won. It's like, but you lost a foot. I won.
Yeah, those people in Saw, man.
People are in Saw too. Like, there was the one guy who had the key, like, implant it behind his eye. Motherfucker, it's an eye.
I saw the first movie.
Okay, like, it was, I think it was like the second or third one. This guy was.
So, first off, hold on. He had a key implanted behind his
eye.
Yeah,
they had a key.
How'd he get it
then? He was knocked out. I guess they took the key and they just rolled it behind his eye, like, roll behind his eye socket, which you can theoretically do. It's fucked up, but you can theoretically do it. Yeah. And he was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, motherfucker, you take your finger, dig the fucking eye out, and get the key. Like,
Dude, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
See,
I have a big phobia thing about my eyeballs.
That's why you have to go quick. You have to go really quick. You can't like, wait for it. You can literally have to just hold your eye open, don't think about it, and just jab your finger straight in the eye. Fucking do it.
Ow! No.
Go straight in the eye with it. It just like quickly. Straight in the eye, pull it out. See, I have no issue touching my eye. I have no issue touching my eye because I worked in a I worked in an eye clinic for a while. So I touch my eye or other people's eyes all the time. There's nothing wrong with me. If you want to see something like fucked up, like watch a doctor do a laser treatment on an eye, that's fucked up. Because
I'm good.
They take the little
I'll tell you this much, Devin. I got something in my eye one time that I ended up having to go to the doctor for. Like, it was bad, and I couldn't get it out of my own eye. And so they needed to put some fucking colored dye in my eye to see where it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to dye like the white parts of my eyeball or mm-hmm. whatever. Just getting the dye in my eye, just to get a drop of it in my eye or whatever, it took the doctor and three nurses to contain me and hold me down. All the while I was saying, I'm trying to cooperate. I am trying to cooperate. And I just wouldn't.
I love the fact that you were saying, I'm trying to cooperate the entire time.
It's true. Same thing. I went to the dentist today. They had to take an x-ray. And then they had the fucking dentist electrocuted me. Something I've never done at a dentist before. He's just like, do you have a pacemaker? I was like, no. He's like, oh, good. Hold on to this. And he handed me like this metal tab that was connected. Wire. I was like, what is this? He's like, okay, I just want you to let me know when you start feeling the tingling. I was like, are you seriously about to fucking electrocute me? He's like, no. And he started chuckling. He's like, I mean, it is technically yes. And I was like, what? Me and electricity do not get along, doc. And like, so he put this thing all he had to do was touch my tooth with it, and then after a while it would start tingling. Essentially, he was gauging the...
But he let you hold it, didn't he? He let you just hold it in your hand for a while.
the metal tab I was supposed to hold on to because I was supposed to ground the ground. I was grounding it out. It's so fucked up. And, like, the whole time he put it in my mouth, my tongue was just trying to fucking force it out of there. And he's like, please? And I was like, I am trying to allow you to do this. My tongue has its own agenda, wants nothing to do with that thing in my mouth, just so you know. Like, I am 100% on board with, hey, doctors, dentists, do what you got to do to, you know, to fix me. But my body parts do not cooperate in the process. Like, my mind is all for it. My body, not so much. It's really fucked up, Devin. I'm fucked up.
Webby, this was you at the dentist right here?
Yes. Yes, it was. It was so messed up. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's that.
So that's the fucking suicide forest in Japan, people. Also known as Aokigahara. You know what? I don't speak. I have a Japanese aunt. I still don't speak Japanese. It really pisses her off whenever I speak Mandarin to her.
You speak Mandarin?
Very little. I'm learning from some people at work.
You speak Mandarin?
I know how to say good morning. Wouldn't
that be great if
Wendy
was completely fluent in Mandarin? I'd be like, what? How have we not done a podcast just you talking in Mandarin constantly and you say nothing in English?
I know how to say a few things in a lot of different languages. I did at one time. I'd have to brush back up on it. I used to know how to say your mom sells shoes in like 9 different languages.
I love it.
Because that was my go-to insult, was anytime somebody got smart with me.
You just say that and they wouldn't know what the fuck you said?
I'd even scream it in English. I wouldn't care. I would just, they'd be like making fun of me or doing whatever, and I'd just turn around and scream, your mom sells shoes! All right,
well, when you brush up on that, let me know, because if I ever GM a game, I want your character, that's his go-to insult, but in every different language. Just don't say it in English, so no one ever knows what you're actually saying.
All right.
Get instantly upset. Just like, I don't know what
else, like, I'm upset about. I don't know. Like, I know enough German to get me probably slapped or arrested.
All right. Oh, and guys, I'm going to put this out here now. If you guys support this podcast enough and you guys, you know, Patreon this podcast enough, me and Webby, well, I'm not getting married because of that. It's a separate thing. We will, if we have enough money to support ourselves for these elaborate trips, we will do an entire podcast series where we just go state to state fucking in a car. Carpool podcasting.
I thought you said something about fucking in a car, and I was like, nope, that's not happening.
Nope. We're going to do carpool podcasting.
I'm fuck yeah. I'd be game for
That'd be
that.
so cool.
That'd be
That'd
sweet.
be so dope. Just rent like an RV and just drive a fucking state to state. In every state, we can just podcast about our adventures.
And then we could stop by individual states and maybe see you
Yep,
guys
and
and have you guys on the podcast.
interview you all individually. That'd be beautiful.
Yep.
I like this. And if you play nice, we
I
might even
don't
come
mind.
to Canada.
Probably not.
Shh.
Canada frightens me, Devin. I've been there once, and apparently they were not in season. But I swear, out of my conversations that I have with Clay, they have a secret, like it's akin to our Navy SEALs. Okay, so like the U.S. has the Navy SEALs, they have maple syrup
They have
ninjas
Mounties?
that. No, these are above the
Oh
Mounties. The
no.
Mounties are those guys. The Mounties are the guys who like they want to be seen. You see the Mounties, and then they're just like, "Hey, we're the Mounties, eh?" No, they have maple syrup ninjas that live high in the trees. You don't see them because they're
You only
ninjas.
feel them right before they kill you. You feel that maple syrup slowly drip down your neck. You're
Well,
like,
that's what it is they lure you into a false sense of security because then you get it on your face, then you're like, "What the hell is this?" Oh, that's maple syrup. Then you look up, shuriken to the face.
yep. It's happened.
It's fucked
It happened
up,
to three of my
okay?
friends. I've been to three funerals because of maple syrup ninjas.
That's right. And see, there was a news story. I'm pretty sure you were telling me about this yesterday, maybe, about how ninjas are on the downfall in
Yep,
Japan.
there's a shortage of ninjas in Japan. So anybody out there,
It's
if you're looking for a
because
career in ninjas, Japan's where to go.
it's a shortage in Japan because they're all going to fucking Canada.
It's true. It's true.
They're all learning.
They've all
They're
fallen in
all
love with the
going
flavors
in.
of maple syrup, and now they're moving to Canada.
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. I've been to three funerals because of maple syrup ninjas, man.
So,
Not again, man. Not
I
again.
mean, I don't know. If we wanted to go meet somebody in Canada to interview them for
Has to be
this road trip
Toronto because has to
podcast,
be Toronto because maple syrup ninjas don't go to Toronto.
well,
That's a
I'd
given.
be willing to meet like John on the border. He's not allowed to come into the
This is
US.
true.
I'd be willing to stand on US soil and talk to him on Canadian
I have been
soil.
detained by Canadian Customs. I will say this. It was for a very short period of time, but that has happened.
It's funny, the one time I went to Canada, I was going to visit Clay, and the lady's like, "Do you have any food or fuck, what else? Like agricultural products with you?" I was like, "No, why would I have that?" And then she's like, "People like smuggling stuff." I was like,
Smuggling what? Cantaloupe? Like
"Agriculture? Really? People are
smuggling
smuggling
cantaloupe?
that?" And then leaving Canada, they didn't ask me shit. They were just like, "Get the fuck out of our country." I was like, "Damn, you people are so strict."
Well, probably because you the people going you the people who stopped you going in were Canadians. People who stopped you
Probably.
going out were Americans.
Then they're all like, "Who are you staying with in your during your visit?" And I had to give Clay's name. What does he do? It's like, oh, I don't remember what the fuck his job title was.
I don't
And
care.
then they're like, "How long do you plan on staying?" It's like a week. They're like a week or a week. It's like, really? Are you kicking me out on a very specific day? This is when my flight leaves. Is that okay? Can I leave on that day? Man, I was getting mouthy with that bitch.
Hey, you know what? You know what? Here, I'm gonna close this off with a reference. If you really, are you ready to close out?
I am ready to
All
close
right,
out.
I'm gonna
Yes.
close this out with a reference for
We are
anyone
going to
who's
have
seen
to
the
do a
show.
si we are gonna we're going to have to do a sign
That's
off.
fine.
So, do you want to do the sign off first before your reference and then end with your
Yep,
reference?
we can do a sign off first.
Okay. So, Devin, where can people follow
You
you?
guys can follow me at DArrow3092.
And of course, thank you guys for listening. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Jax Forest Walker, all one word. Also, send ideas for topics. Send questions. I really, really, really want people to send questions so I can do a whole episode just answering people's questions to the best of my ability. Advice. I love giving advice. I think I'm pretty good at it, mainly because during the course of my life, I've either been through a lot of shit or known somebody personally who has been through a lot of shit. I can cover a lot of those bases, you know, basic grounds there. But if you have those, send those to email those to simplyunprofessional@gmail.com. Also visit our website, www.distractionsmedia.com. We have a Patreon at www.patreon.com/distractionsmedia. And until next time, guys, fuck Booster.
Fuck Booster Gold. And my little piece of advice for all of you, don't piss off those bitches in airports.
Indubitable.